Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
Here in Alaska, I always think of the mama grizzly bears that rise up on their hind legs when somebody's coming to attack their cubs, to do something adverse toward their cubs. You thought pit bulls were tough. Well, you don't want to mess with the mama grizzlies.
From Sarah Palin, obviously, as in that video about the women she calls mama grizzlies, to Linda McMahon and Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle. It's the women on the right who are garnering attention this election season. Meanwhile, pollsters are finding that women voters in general are much likely to actually turn out this November. The Nation magazine takes a look at women in politics in 2010 in this week's issue. And I'm joined by Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation and co-editor of the book Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare, and Rebecca Traister, senior writer for Salon, author of the new book, Big Girls Don't Cry, The Election That Changed Everything for American Women. And she's also written for this Nation magazine issue. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
1992, Betsy, was dubbed the year of the woman way back when Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein got elected to the Senate. I think that made five or six at that time, and so it was the year of the woman. Now Boxer is running against another woman, Carly Fiorina, but of course a Republican. Is this the year of the Republican woman?
Well, I mean, I think people could be forgiven for thinking that because we have a number of marquee races where they're featuring Republican women. And, I mean, you have to think about the context in which this is happening, which is when the numbers of Republican female legislators in the Senate and in the House are tiny, actually. So even the emergence of, you know, a few viable female candidates for Senate seats is a big deal. I mean, there are now about four Republican women in the Senate. I think, you know, there may be a sort of slight uptick in those numbers. But overall, actually, a lot of Republican women who filed to run lost an enormous number. Like, I think something like 81 lost their primaries in the House. And it was only the very, very few and now extremely, you know, well-known ultra-conservative women who won.
So considering the overall ongoing dearth of women in Congress, but the prevalence of high-profile Tea Party women that you were, as you were just saying, is the Tea Party doing a better job of promoting women than the Democrats or even the mainstream Republican Party?
Well, I think that the Republicans are doing a great job of marketing themselves as the party of women. I think a lot of this is an illusion. And in fact, almost everything the party stands for is actually detrimental to the interests of women. And I think women, by and large, in the electorate know that. But I do think there is something interesting about what's going on with the Tea Party, which is that, you know, it is providing a sort of opening and entree for these women who had been grassroots activists, maybe not very well known, Sharon Angle, Christine O'Donnell, who are now, you know, the stars. And actually, if you look at how the party itself, the Republican Party, has treated women, it's been extremely sexist, actually. I mean, it has this Young Guns program, which had at one point only 7 women out of 110, you know, rising star Young Guns. I mean, even the name Young Guns, it's like it's a very,
very
macho thing.
Yeah. Listeners, anybody listening right now who would consider yourself a Tea Party feminist, if that sounds like you, call us up, 212-433-WNYC. We'll take calls from others as well in a few minutes. But right now, if this might be a needle in a haystack, if there is anybody who would consider yourself a Tea Party feminist, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Rebecca Traister, you take the Democrats to task for not backing their female candidates and for not promoting women's issues in general. What do you have in mind specifically?
Well, I think that one of the things that we have seen the Tea Partiers do in their attempt to rebrand conservatism and republicanism and the Tea Party as the party of women is listen to something that's going on in the country that the Democrats are not listening to. And that's my frustration, is that the Democrats, I feel, aren't doing anything to combat this very weak totally implausible claim that these few Republican women are somehow furthering the cause of women. The Democrats have truth on their side and in fact, are the party of women, 57%. In fact, you know, traditionally, the reason that they've backed away from anything that might feminize them is because they've been known as the mommy party. Women are their base. Women's issues have been issues that they have historically fought for. And yet this year, we don't see them combating this Republican branding strategy and saying, no, wait, we are the party of women. The first piece of legislation that Obama signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. There's no repetition of Nancy Pelosi's very powerful observation that in healthcare, Democrats made being a woman not be an pre-existing condition anymore. There is not a huge amount of support for female candidates on the Democratic side, and I am very frustrated by that, especially given that we have seen in recent years, especially coming out of the 2008 election, that there is an increasing and open appetite for female leadership. You had Hillary Clinton with 18 million ardent supporters. And I think the Democrats are relying on very old conventional wisdom about we don't want to over-feminize ourselves, and they're not listening to the messages that maybe conservatives are, which is we can embrace the language and symbolism of feminism.
We only have one line lighting so far, but Monique in Westchester, are you our Tea Party feminist?
I guess I am. I don't really see myself as a Tea Partier, but the more I hear of what some of the messages that the Tea Party is saying, I'm beginning to think, you know, this old Democrat is becoming older, insane, or maybe wiser. And I'm a very, you know, I do consider myself a feminist in the most fundamental ways. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. And a lot of the issues that are coming out as far as choice and being able to make choices about my family, about my future, I kind of see my choices being taken away from me.
Betsy Reed, you want to engage Monique?
Sure. Well, I mean, I feel like the Tea Party has done a good job giving people the impression that they care, that they understand that kind of frustration, which is very pervasive right now. I mean, I think when you look at where women, like non-college educated women, are in terms of they're the sort of swing voters in this election, people are really frustrated and they feel let down by the Obama administration, and they don't feel like people in Washington really care about their lives.
Absolutely, and I think that what is missing is a sense of integrity. You know, I once said this, that, you know, sometimes I'd rather take stupid but honest that has integrity than smart and sneaky. And I feel like so much of this, you know, the intellectual, the sort of almost talking down to issues about, be it healthcare and how healthcare was done and what the implications are and how it was discussed. It wasn't discussed on issues. It wasn't engaged. We didn't talk about tort reform. We didn't talk about issues that were fundamental to a family. You know, I mean, my budget is going out the wall, you know, with so many things.
So Monique, stay there for a second. Rebecca, is there anything inconsistent with feminism in this concern over spending and government deficits and, you know, healthcare reform, for example?
Well, there's an enormous amount. When you talk about integrity, one of the things I think about is the sort of the wholeness of the argument. And I understand. I mean, I've repeated some of the frustrations that that I've had with the Democratic Party, with the Obama administration, with the way that healthcare was developed, the trade-offs that were made on reproductive rights. I understand the frustration. But at the same time, when you're talking about the Tea Party, you're also talking, especially Monique, you describe yourself as an old-style feminist from the 60s and 70s. Look at the parts, the other things that the Tea Party is pushing, restrictions not only on reproductive rights. This is the social part of the Tea Party that they don't talk about very much. But when you're talking about these very conservative women, labor policy, economic policy, healthcare policy that would actually work against women. Democrats are the people, when you talk about the economy, again, Democrats pushed fair pay legislation. That's the kind of thing that helps women, despite the very real frustrations that we may have with the left.
When it comes into things like abortion, I think that we have gone away from giving women choices about the life they have inside of them. See, I think one of the things is, you know, as a woman, I think it's really important for a woman to have a choice. That if she chooses, for example, to have a child, that it's not automatically let's let dad and the boyfriend and everyone else decide for you, because you don't have any other options.
But under the law, choice means choice.
You know, under the law, exactly. But I don't think that, for example, that we're not letting the fuller choices and the fuller implications. I respect the fact that, for example, we are giving adoption a bigger role in the choices that can be made. But, you know, for me, choice is about knowing options and being given options and being able to choose and not being told what should be done and what is your choice and what you should be doing at what time.
Monique,
as a woman, that's really important, is for all of us to be able to make choices. And I don't like when I feel like more of those choices are being taken away from me.
Thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. Betsy Reed from The Nation, you wanted to add one more thing about...
Well, yeah, Monique. I mean, I think what I wanted to say about the Tea Party is that, you know, while they actually, they are pretty good at presenting themselves as being about these issues, choice, you know, feeling people's frustration, in reality, what they actually stand for in terms of policies is the worst possible thing, because in terms of choice, for example, we have all these Tea Party candidates now who are running on a platform that would outlaw abortion in cases of rape and incest. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable what they're saying. It's very extreme. And then if you look at, you know, the economic policies, I mean, these are precisely the policies, the budget slashing, free market policies that would undermine women and children in this country. So, I mean, I think the Democrats need to really hammer this home.
My guests on WNYC are Betsy Reed, who is just speaking, executive editor of The Nation. She's also co-editor of the book Going Rouge, Sarah Palin, An American Nightmare, and Rebecca Traister, also contributing to this week's Nation magazine, a set of articles on women in politics in 2010. She's a senior writer for Salon, otherwise an author of the new book, Big Girls Don't Cry, The Election That Changed Everything for American Women. Which election was that, by the way?
The 2008 election. It's amazing. Everything's
it
changed,
was?
Isn't it?
It did?
An enormous amount changed, yes. I mean, it's not the election that fixed everything for American women. It is the election that threw all these questions really up in the air. And a lot of the reason that we're talking about this, the fact that Sarah Palin exists, that she has created, however false, this sense, in part has instigated this sense that Republicans are the party of women. All these issues exploded out of what happened in 2008, in which we saw the models for female leadership on both sides of the aisle just double and triple and quadruple in front of us.
Meaning Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton?
Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton and the conversation about gender and power that began in the lead up to 2008 with Hillary Clinton, who was the first woman in 220 years to get within spitting distance of a major party nomination for president. And what it did was absolutely expand the ways in which we could conceive of, talk about, criticize, react to, and support female leaders from both parties, and that is you can go back and see not only 200 years of American women's history sort of erupt during the 2008 election, but we're still dealing with the fallout. We're still experiencing the changes that election brought about, and that's part of the conversation we're having today.
Steve from Brooklyn on our comments page asks, Sarah Palin uses her femininity and particularly her looks in a unique and very successful way. As a feminist, what do you think about her portrayal as both attractive and strong? Asks Steve from Brooklyn. Betsy?
Well, I mean, I would say one thing that I found extremely interesting as I was working on this story for The Nation is that when you look at the numbers, Sarah Palin and a lot of these other right-wing female legislators are much more attractive to men than they are to women, that they've actually brought out, you know, a lot of support among men, and they have used their attractiveness in this way. I mean, you look at Michelle Bachmann, she has veered to the right, you know, talking about death panels and saying, you know, people need to get armed and dangerous. She's very extreme in her rhetoric. And if you look at what's happened with her polling numbers, the gender gap in that race has widened significantly in the last couple of years. And so, you know, it's women who actually don't like this that went to I think they do use their attractiveness. This is sort of like Fox News phenomenon, you know, like Fox News actually puts more women on their shows than MSNBC, which is an interesting fact. But like, it's not because they are feminists, obviously.
And which I guess raises the age old question. What's more important, the gender of the candidate or their views on the issues if women's empowerment is your goal? And maybe that's just an unanswerable question, or maybe you just say it's a false choice.
Well, I think women do care about where a woman candidate stands on women's issues, and that's why they're not going for these women.
And Frank Rich's column yesterday in the Times was called The Very Useful Idiocy of Christine O'Donnell, making the case that candidates like O'Donnell hide the true nature of the big business Republican Party. And he made the case that Christine O'Donnell is, in effect, a front. But we're almost out of time. Rebecca, here in New York, the poll that showed Carl Paladino close to Andrew Cuomo in the governor's race found a 15-point gender gap, which I guess is similar to things that are being found around the country. So after the election that supposedly changed everything for women, men who tend to be more conservative on most issues are angry at government. They're motivated to the polls. Women are disillusioned with Obama, disillusioned with the amount of change, and that's leading them to stay home, apparently, at least in the, in the projections of things as reflected in these polls.
Well, but I don't think – I mean, first of all, women tend to decide very late. The possible and extremely worrisome gender gap and enthusiasm gap as it applies to women, and the worry that women – and predominantly Democratic women aren't going to come out, that may be not as true as we think. Women tend to decide later. They tend to decide very close to an election whether or not they're going to vote and for whom they're going to vote. So we may see those numbers change in coming weeks. But the other thing is, you describe men as being angry. I think part of what we're seeing is women being angry too. It's just so far being expressed in a slightly different way. And I do think that part of what happened in 2008 is that women were really pulled into the process. They've always been a part of the process. More women in this country vote than men. But in part, what we're hearing from women when we're hearing about their lack of enthusiasm, we are hearing that they are frustrated with the way that they've been addressed perhaps by the Democratic Party, or that they have not been addressed by the Democratic Party. And what we do need to let everybody know is that it's not going to be in their best interest to stay home and allow conservative candidates to win and further dismantle their path toward equality. But on the other hand, what you are hearing and what the Democrats should be hearing is a disenchantment with the way that this party has been addressing its women, promoting its candidates, trading on women's rights in order to pass more broadly progressive legislation and build majorities. And the Democrats have got to listen to this and they have got to listen to what's happening on the Republican side in terms of how conservatives are marketing themselves to women, and understand that women's appetites are big, they're changing, and we need to address them directly.
Now, coming up next, we're going to take calls from anybody who voted for the first time in 2008, and we will ask, are you going back to the polls again this November? President Obama is making a big push to get you because so many first-time voters in 2008 did vote for the Democrats. If you voted in 2008, are you going to vote again in 2010 if you voted for the first time in 2008? And we also want to hear from people who are voting for the first time this year and how you feel about that. What's motivating you to do that? Is it anger? Is it hope? Is it something else? And all of this is to mark the fact that we are now at T-minus 5 days to register to vote in New York State for the elections that are coming in November. So we'll talk about how you can actually sign up to register to vote. And we're opening up the phones right now for people who voted for the first time in 2008 or 2009 or who plan to vote for the first time in 2010. What motivated you to the polls, and do you think you'll go back? 212-433-WNYC. You can call right now, 212-433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after a short break. We thank Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation and co-editor of Going Rouge, and Rebecca Traister, senior writer for Salon, author of the book Big Girls Don't Cry. They have both contributed to The Nation magazine's set of articles on women in politics this week. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Those calls from new voters and recently new voters next, 212-433-WNYC. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.